podcast on inspiring our youth for our urban youth for success. Mm-hmm. On the podcast this evening, I have Mr. Marcel Scaife with Ready by 21. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is going to be supporting my podcast series on inspiring our urban youth. And first question that I have for you is I would just like to know more about your organization, Ready by 21, and just some of the things that you guys are doing in the communities to support and help our urban youth.
So Ready by 21 is a collective impact organization. It's inside of United Way. It's a child well-being organization. So we focus on children from birth to 21. Our primary geographic area is the city of St. Louis, St. Louis County, St. Charles County, and Jefferson County. So we have a couple of different initiatives. We have early access to early childhood initiatives. We have a regional youth employment coalition. And then we have the Youth Violence Prevention Partnership.
Awesome. That's really an awesome program. How long has this initiative been in place, Ready by 21?
I want to say the national model has been around for a while, but in St. Louis, Ready by 21 has been around for about 5 years.
I would like to know more about, you know, what really motivated you to begin mentoring and coaching our youth in the community.
So my journey into this work, it started when I was at the Father Support Center. I was a caseworker there, and then I went to employment manager, and then I went to working with the reentry population, and I led some of those initial grants that they received. And so you saw what happens when the father is not in the house. You saw the youth, when they did reconnect with their father, how their life turned around. And so from there, it led me to go be a kindergarten teacher. I don't know how I made that shift from working with reentry into kindergarten, but I really enjoyed working with those kids. But then again, I wanted to do something that was really impactful. And so St. Louis received a Safe and Thriving St. Louis grant to really come up with a strategic plan to do some extra work for black boys to keep them out of gangs and away from gun violence. And so I decided to apply for that position and got that position. So I love teaching and came straight into this work, which is different because I'm used to running programs, and this work is really systems change. And how do you change systems and change outcomes? And so it's a different type of thinking, but it still relates to each other.
Well, that's really awesome. So I can say with that it seems like you've always kind of had that desire to kind of work with our urban youth. About some of the, I think I was asking a question about the vision for the future and stepping the youth in the community and how maybe there are some efforts that Ready by 21 is already initiating our plan to as we're going forward in the future.
So I guess let's backtrack to the actual grant. So in 2017, the City of St. Louis, Washington University, Ready by 21, we received this Safe and Thriving St. Louis grant. And so this grant is administrated by the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Partnership, OJJDP. We love acronyms. And so it requires us to create a 5-year strategic plan on how we're going to reduce gun and gang violence in the City of St. Louis. And so you have the plan. The grant is 3 years, and 1 year was to write the strategic plan. Then you had 2 years of implementing some of the things that you called out in your strategic plan. And so St. Louis is not limited on plans. We have tons of violence prevention plans, but none of them really executed anything. And one thing that the plans didn't have is that it really didn't center youth voice, and so they didn't get the feel of the youth being there to create the plan. So we wanted this plan to be different. We wanted to include the youth in the decision-making process and in the writing process. And so the summer of 2018, we held about 10 community youth cafes, and we went to the youth, we paid the youth, we fed them, and we also trained 6 college students on how to be facilitators for that process. And so they led those cafes, and they got all the feedback. We asked the youth just different questions about how has violence impacted you, what's the things you want to see in your community. One of the old St. Louis violence prevention plans said, should we have more neighborhood watch people? And one of the youth reminded us that George Zimmerman was a neighborhood watch captain. And so the youth are really into what's going on, and they really wanted their voices to be heard. And so what they didn't realize is that they was helping us create this strategic plan. So at the end of 2018, we released a strategic plan. It was approved by the Department of Justice. And so in 2019, we started to implement some of those things. So we worked with Mission St. Louis, and we created a music studio. And so disconnected youth, so out-of-school youth between 18 and 25 can go to their music studio and create positive music, but they have to be in a job training program or working. And then we also have Open Gym inside of Mission St. Louis. So that's another way to get kids off of the street. But again, once you get them in there, they're getting some conflict resolution training. They're also getting connected to their job training program. We work with Alive and Well. They're doing trauma workshops with us. And so they're doing trauma workshops across St. Louis to really see what's going on with the youth and how are the youth really doing. The one feedback that we got from 2 hours they're doing their workshop, we're exposing a lot of trauma that those youth experienced. And so we had to make sure that we had some social workers and some therapists there to make sure that we don't leave them just in that space. We also work with Homegrown STL out of Washington University. We're looking at mentoring science. So he's working with agencies to come up with some mentoring science and give them some best practices. And so they would implement those into their organizations. Because one thing we know is that, especially with black boys, there's a backlog. Black boys are not enough mentors. And so we want to make sure that we can help some agencies build that capacity to accept more black boys for mentees. And then we work with SLACO to do like youth and adult shared leadership. One thing we noticed is that the adults always complain about the youth, but the youth were never at the table. And so we work with them to create a program so that they can share leadership and they can work together and learn how to work together. And so that was our year one activities. We get into year two, starting in January, and we're launching a youth empowerment program, which is going to be a non-month youth fellowship program and teaching them community advocacy, community organizing, how to lead an organization, how to write a grant. And it's teaching the youth how to do all this stuff so when they go to these community organizations, they can sit on their boards and really have something to add, some value to add to them.
That's an awesome program. So how do you guys kind of solicit these college kids to come in and want to be a part of such a great, program?
So when we looked at the college students to facilitate the process, we tried to do it on our own. We realized that doesn't work. And so we went back to our partners and the people that we work with and said, do you have any college youth that you think can help us facilitate this? And we learned a long time ago that doing stuff on your own really doesn't work and you really need your partners who have relationships with youth. With youth, the relationship is everything. And so if you don't have those relationships, it's hard to build. And so we read about someone that doesn't necessarily have those relationships, but we have a good network and we reach out to our partners to help us with that.
That's awesome. That is really awesome. So as a, a mentor to urban youth, again, I know you're surrounded by, the youth that are surrounded by violence, drugs, and in a lot of cases, dysfunctions within their families. You must see or hear about, a lot of tragedy at times within these families. How do you manage to, keep a positive outlook on your mission and this program?
Well, I tell you, like, this summer was rough. We lost 13 youth to gun violence, and it was unexpected, and it was – the work got hard at times because it's like we're spinning our wheels, and we didn't have the answers. And for a lot of youth, you just had to sit there and listen. My son is 16, and so he lost one of his friends, and he was trying to – and a few months before that, I lost my best friend to gun violence. And so it was like – it was a pain that I never wanted to share with him. But in that moment, we had to share that pain together because we both were grieving at that time. I think for the youth, we just had to be there and listen and let them express themselves how they wanted to express themselves and just understand and not to have the answers, but just to be a voice and another caring adult to listen to them. But, I couldn't imagine going through that and being 7 and 8 and 9 and seeing that you're – we read one story where a girl was like, all the boys in the class had died over the summer. It's one of those, like, you don't even know how to respond to it. And so, and I don't think it's enough money that we could pump into the system to even make these outcomes even different. It's one of those, the community just has to show up.
Absolutely. And I know every time you turn on the TV, you're hearing these tragic stories. So, again, just the fact that it's definitely enlightening to be able to talk to you and know that this is a part of what you have to hear on a regular basis and just kind of get your insight and more into the programs that you guys are doing out in the communities. I think that's a really, really an awesome job. We need more
more men like yourself actually out there supporting and getting involved in these type of programs and such. So are there any, you know, like really great success stories that you have that you can share that have come out of the, you know, the programs to date?
I think one of my biggest success stories is that we work with Alive and Well. And so, like, Ready by 21, we don't provide direct services. And so, like, within this grant, we're giving our subcontracts to nonprofits who actually go out and do their work every day. And so we get, you know, feedback and we get reports. And, you know, and sometimes I try to go to the – actually, I come from programs. So, like, sometimes I'm like, I need to see people. I sit at my desk and you write – you look at MOUs and you write grants. It's like, I need to see people and keep that – and not be so disconnected – that you realize we're writing a grant, we're reading a report, but it's a person attached to it. And so Alive and Well did these community workshops, and then, you know, one of the ladies, Montrese, was like, she gave out a phone number and told the youth, you know, they need anybody to talk to call. And, you know, you give a youth your number, you're not thinking the youth is going to call you at all, you know, whatever. But he called, and he kept calling. And she said she had to set boundaries for him because he kept calling because he needed someone to talk to. And so it let us know that the work you were doing is important, that they need someone to talk to. And if you open up that line of communication, it's going to work. And I also think another great story is that, you know, the first summer we started doing this work, we worked with an organization called SELU Jobs. And they provide summer jobs for low-income youth in St. Louis. And so we got one of those youth. He worked the summer with us. And I was thinking, yeah, you're going to work. And, you know, that's the end of the conversation. And when you're 180 hours up, you know, you go back to college and I go back to doing my job. But it's strange that, you know, like every 3-4 months, we're eating lunch. All right. If he knows I'm going to be at Harris Stowe that day, he's calling me like, Mr. Marcel, you know, are you on campus today? And I'm like, you just want a free meal. But, you know, let's sit down and talk and work this stuff out. And so it's one of those, I always say he's the little brother that I never asked for. But I know I have to be here for him and help him guide him through this path of college and life. And, you know, and it was one of those things where it was just a natural relationship with just a kid who really needed some guidance. And it's like, so, you know, he's calling every test he takes and trying to help him move into his dorm. And so it's those connections that, you know, that you build those relationships. And then, you know, now we can call back and every summer he's like, you got anything for me to do? And so we're just moving him to other organizations that he can actually get some work experience at.
Well, I know it's those type of success stories that help really, you know, help you really see the light that, okay, that something that we're doing out here is really actually working, you know, even though, again, like I said, it may be small pieces, but whatever that is, that's going in a positive direction. I think that's that's wonderful and that's great. You know, so we'll definitely take the bite-sized pieces to keep us going in the right direction. So that's awesome.
Right.
As again, we hear all of the negative things on TV when we hear about our youth. So from your you know, perspective, you know, what do you see as some of the misconceptions society maybe have about our urban youth?
I think one, that they don't care, that they're not informed. I mean, when you talk to some of these youth, you know, that I went to we have a youth council, and so at that time we were partnering with Better Family Life, and they got Colonel Robinson from the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department to show up, and the youth sat down and had a town hall to ask them, you know, hard questions about stop and frisk and, you know, when to use deadly force, and the youth really want to know the answers to these questions, and they want to hold elected officials accountable. This past August, we hosted a Yes Summit with University of Missouri Extension. And that summit, we had 150 youth actually apply to come to this summit to talk about policies. And the youth had 45 minutes to look at different sectors and different topics and create policies around those topics. And so I led the law enforcement sector. And so the youth came up with policies around how to use body cams, when to use deadly force. They wanted to see police officers get promoted from doing neighborhood events and community watches instead of how many tickets they write. So they really engage, and they want a platform to speak, and they want someone to listen. I wrote an article a few months ago about nurturing. And so I think one thing we really need to realize that our black boys need to be more nurtured. Sometimes we tell boys to be tough and grow up, and then they lose that nurturing aspect. And then you get boys who don't know how to show love and don't know how to receive love. And so it's really been a mission of mine to make sure that those boys are getting the counseling and the affection that they need through this process.
That's an awesome observation there, too. That's something that I hadn't thought about it from that standpoint, but you're right. I think that's what a lot of these kids need is someone, like you say, nurture to show them love and show them that there's other ways. And I think you're right. A lot of boys are being told to be tough, you know, and some of them turn out to be just that, to be tough. And maybe that I can, you know, maybe there's something that I can even get involved in. I think that would be awesome. I just think that there are so many opportunities to be able to help our youth. So I definitely want to find an opportunity to, like I say, just to hear more, you know, offline, of course, outside of our podcast here, and to just know more about your programs and where, you know, maybe that I can fit in to support some of that. Thank you, Mr. Purcell, for your time this evening and taking time to be a part of this podcast. I really appreciate that.
We noted that the youth, we have an It Starts With Us mini grant, and so we created, it's a pot of money for youth to apply for these grants up to $2,500, and we had so many youth say they want to do podcasts. So there may be an avenue where you can work with them on doing podcasts, because none of us have that experience. And I'm like, okay, I don't know where you do a podcast at, but, you know, we have a studio at Mission St. Louis. We were like, if you want to do a podcast, we can provide the studio equipment, but we need someone to help you. But Mission St. Louis didn't want to have to facilitate lead podcast training. So, like, that may be an area that you can help those youth who want to do. We had, like, six youth saying they want to do podcasts, but, you know, none of us really have that bandwidth to actually do a podcast.
Absolutely. That's definitely an area that I'm pretty comfortable in.